This is the John Clayton Show.
Brought to you by Coors Light, the world's most refreshing beer.
On 710 ESPN Seattle.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Joining us right now is Greg Bell from the Tacoma News Tribune. And so, Greg, today, first, before we get started, it's like, are you surprised that they take a Saturday off 2 days into camp?
Yeah, I am, John. Hi. Last year, they took 4 practice days before getting their first day off. So it is different. It's the new CBA and the new way of the world, right? You and I used to cover 2-a-days.
Oh, yeah.
Smacking each other. Now they don't even tackle and bring guys to the ground, even when they do go for a few days in a row. So, yeah, the CBA mandates at least 1 off day a week from training camp. And, in fact, the Sox have 2, John. They have another one on Wednesday. It is different. They aren't even in pads yet. They had 2 days in no pads and then an off day.
I know. Very, very strange, but again, that's, I tell you what, I mean, you see it, and I see it in other camps, too, is that everybody now is just kind of rolling with it and realizing it's like, you know, this is a marathon, and if a guy's just barely questionable, they're going to keep him out of practice. They're going to be very cautious with him.
Exactly. Bobby Wagner's in that situation right now. He's only doing individual drills. Pete Carroll hasn't specified what injury Wagner has, and he spoke to the media 2 days ago, so it's not serious enough where he's not available at all. But he hasn't done any teamwork. Actually, Emmanuel Beal, an undrafted rookie from Oklahoma, has been the middle linebacker after Shaquille Griffin got some time during minicamp and OTAs there behind Wagner. It's been Beal getting an opportunity. I don't think it's a concern for Wagner, but like you said, it's just the way of the NFL now that these guys are such valuable commodities that get beat so badly during the season that it's not worth doing anything in July and August, the availability for the real season. And, the physical toll, I often remark to people in and out of business, the physical toll these guys take on a weekly basis during the regular season, the more off days like today and the more days off Bobby Wagner can get, the better. It's quite a car wreck every – it's just amazing to me, frankly, how fast and how hard and how big these players are and how hard they hit that they can even play 16 games.
Oh, no question. What's early impressions of camp for 2 days?
John, I think without a doubt the most impressive physical player is Chris Carson.
Right.
And he was that way during the offseason, especially considering where he's come from, a broken leg, severe ankle, ligament damage the 1st of October. He wasn't fully back even in the spring and late April when they chose Rashad Penny in the first round. But he's back now. I mean, he's gained 10 pounds. He looks sleeker. If you can gain 10 pounds and look sleeker and faster, he's just impressive, really. And I know no one's tackling him, and all that. But we saw in the first month of the regular and during the preseason what he can do on the field against tacklers, the decisive running. What's really separated him, John, and the reason why the people across the country think Rashad Penny is going to be the first number one back just because he's the number one pick, the reason why that he right now won't be and that Carson will is because of Carson's pass blocking and how physical he is, proved to be last year during the regular season, something Rashad Penny has never had to do. And that really is the trump card now for the running back job for Chris Carson, is his ability in the passing game, not just to catch the ball, but the pass block. Therefore, Brian Schottenheimer can have Carson on the field for any play in the playbook. Not like C.J. Prosise, not right with Rashad Penny right now, who's a primarily college running back. Not a C.J. Prosise who catches the ball out of the backfield. Not a J.D. McKissick who catches the ball from the third wide receiver. Chris Carson right now for the offense is everything they want a running back to do in one man. And that's why I think he has the upper hand. And he's going to have to falter or get hurt, in my mind, for him not to be the starting running back in Denver next year.
See, I was saying that from draft day. I just think that, one, you don't have to rush Penny. I mean, you know, what you do is pretty much similar, maybe a little bit different than, I guess, New Orleans, because they had Kamara as a third down guy catching the ball, and he did so well at it. But, you know, in the case of Carson, he catches the ball well. He's a big back. He runs the ball well. And I look at the run game as being the key for the defense, because, you know, we're seeing the 4-12 predictions and that. I don't buy that, because if you have a quarterback and you have a respectable defense, not necessarily a bad defense, and you have the running game, I mean, you're going to be 8 or 9 wins.
Yeah, I think Russell. Yeah, I agree, John. I think Russell Wilson's going to keep them in contention in the NFC West into around 8, 9, 10 wins, and it'll be If they get a running game, they could be in 10 wins. If they don't have a running game, it can be 8 or 7 wins. That's how important the running game is. And of course, that's the formula Pete Carroll wants to play. Ball control, running game, and a defense that wins games. Get the lead early, pound them with deep defense and a pass rush, and that's the big question to me on the defense right now, John. That formula is lacking a consistent pass rush and a prime pass rusher. Frank Clark, of course, has 19 sacks the last two seasons. He's coming off a wrist surgery last month. He says he's fine. He's been laughing at me saying that it was a concern. He says he's ready to go, and he has been on the field, but not full go for these first 2 days. He should be fine by the end of August or even middle of August, but what else? Deion Jordan, after his third knee surgery in 13 months, he's got another injury that Carroll didn't specify. It's going to keep him out multiple 6 weeks. Rasheem Green, the third-round pick, is still a rookie and unproven in that inside-outside Michael Bennett pass rush role. Who's going to sack the quarterback, or at least make the quarterback get rid of the ball? I think that's where the Pete Carroll formula of ball control, run the ball, win games with defense late is lacking right now, is the pass rush. And you know, John, if they don't have a pass rush, that secondary is going to get picked on. Even the best secondary, even the best of boom, gave up plays when quarterbacks have time to throw.
Oh, no question. And that's when I saw Deion Jordan not practicing, and then we find out. What was it? Was it the knee again, or did he have was that three procedures on the knee in 18 months?
3 in 14 months from this spring. But Carroll said, when I asked him, was it related to the knee, the latest knee operation, he said no. But he was very vague and unspecified what the injury was since that. But he said it wasn't related to the issue that made Jordan have the latest surgery. But suffice to say, all Carroll would say is it's probably going to be multiple weeks before he can get on the field. Now, we're only July 28th or whatever it is, so that's not – a few weeks won't be debilitating. But for a guy who's only played 5 games in 3 seasons, he needs to play some games before they get real. And he needs to show that he can stay on the field multiple games and multiple snaps. He was going to be starting the defensive end going into camp opposite Frank Clark, and now we don't know when he's going to get on the field.
I know, and that's what I thought was the biggest concern, because then you think about it, who's the third guy? You don't know who that is. I mean, yesterday
Brandon Jackson, I don't know.
Yeah, no, that's what I mean. It's like, okay, I know yesterday they took Barkevious Mingo and kind of mixed him in,
right,
with Marcus Smith, but both of those guys are trying to do a little stuff at the strong side linebacker position too.
Exactly. And those guys have done zero defensive end in the mini camps and OTAs all offseason. And then they threw him back in the defensive end this week because of Jordan and Clark not being full go. Brandon Jackson's getting looks. As I said, Rasheem Green's getting some looks as well. John, I really think, and I think I've talked with you about this before on the air, I think the next veteran that they sign with playing experience around the NFL before the regular season opener is a pass rusher.
100%.
That's a huge combo. But if there's one available who can walk, talk, and sack the quarterback before, he's probably going to be in Seattle before that field opener.
Oh, I agree. I mean, I've been thinking that all along because, that's why I was a little surprised that Connor Barwin didn't seem to be in the mix. He signed with the New York Giants because when you look at the landscape, you got Elvis Dumervil, and I don't know how much football is left in him. There's not a lot of pass rushers, but I think they definitely need one. And if they don't find him in free agency, then they got to probably trade for one.
Yeah, you're right. And John Schneider has made multiple trades almost every year here the last 5 or 6 seasons at the cutdown time, right before the season. They got Justin Coleman that way. They got Sheldon Richardson that way. Then it depends on what position. Right now, that position's pass rusher. Dumervil can even run a jog or sprint. He's probably going to get a chance. And rest assured, they've been shopping. I know that name among many others that are still out there. But to me, John, that is still the main concern with this defense. I think Trey Flowers is eventually going to challenge Byron Maxwell for that job at right cornerback. It's not happening yet. Flowers is just a couple weeks into converting from a college safety at Oklahoma State. And Maxwell's only signed for 1 year. It's not like they brought him back to be the longtime guy from age 30. The future is Trey Flowers, and it's going to be training camp. One of the things I'm watching is, when is that future going to come? Is it going to come sooner or later?
Because he looks good. I mean, he looks the part. There's no question about it. I was kind of interested in that Nico Thorpe looks like he's taking a little bit of a run for some playing time, whether it's going to be the backup slot or maybe being the third option at cornerback. But it looks like he's going to be in the mix a little bit.
He's running some slot nickel behind Justin Colby much more than he played last season. And that's another intriguing option for them. A younger player that wouldn't cost much. Maybe they're going to give a lot of guys a chance, put it that way, because, as I said, they know what Byron Maxwell has, but he's 30 years old. He's only on a one-year deal. It would not surprise me at all if Byron Maxwell is starting by midseason. And that's not to say that Maxwell hasn't played. It's just they have youth, and they've been drafting youth in that position now for a couple of years.
I think they look okay at defensive tackle. I know it's a big drop off when you don't have Sheldon Richardson in that, but I think with what they have, it doesn't look bad. And look, both players from Minnesota show you a little something.
Josh is a big man there, and Brandon Kneebane-esque. He's not as big as Kneebane, but he looks athletic. Tom Johnson does. He's going to get a lot of opportunity, and I could see him getting some pass rush time as well. They have time as deep right now in the defensive line. Due to the Daytona 500 speed rushers of Clark and Bennett and Marshall, that's the way this line is built. They're going to be right now these defensive tackles that are pass rushers on third down and has a chance to be one of those.
Mm-hmm. What do you see at the wide receiver position behind Tyler Lockett?
Well, Brandon Marshall's on the field. He's not full go yet, John, as you saw yesterday, but he's getting a little more work. And in a few days, he's going to get a chance to see if he's still got anything. And I still think it's his number two job to win. And he's got a prime opportunity to win that spot because he wins of his size, 6'5", and his pedigree, of course, 6 100-yard seasons. They're the only team that thinks he's got anything left. And I think we're going to find out the next couple of weeks how much is left in Brandon Marshall. And then David Moore is looking good. He has looked good the first two days. He's got a lot of opportunities. In my mind, at least I think, it looks like in Russell Wilson's trust, he's passed Amaro Darbo for the time being, which is somewhat a surprise because Darbo's a third-round pick, a third-year program at the University of Michigan. John Schneider has gone on and on about what a polished pro route runner he is. He's a seventh-round pick from East Central in Oklahoma. Division II school is the one that's getting the trust of Russell Wilson so far in the first 2 days of camp.
Mm-hmm. What was your thought? I mean, for day one, they had Tedrick Thompson at free safety with Bradley McDougal at strong. And then yesterday, they had Delano Hill at strong and then Bradley McDougal. It looks like they're going to kind of just keep bouncing back and forth like that before one of the two steps up.
They are. They want to see which of those kids is ready to play right now. And Bradley McDougal would play to the other spot, depending on whether Thompson's the free safety or Hill's the strong. But don't forget Maurice Alexander. Everyone's forgot about him because he hasn't done anything since the Seahawks signed him in the spring. He's had a shoulder injury all offseason. He hasn't been full go yet. Pete Carroll said yesterday that Alexander is going to get it about 4 to 5 days from now will be full go. He started, 19 games over his 2-3-year seasons for the Los Angeles Rams until they benched him in October of last year, and then they cut him. So he didn't play for anyone the rest of last season. He's one of those chips on the shoulder guys that Pete Carroll really loves to have around. Prove himself. I think Maurice Alexander is going to be a fast hitter, a strong safety. Not saying he's going to win the job because I haven't seen him on the field yet, but Pete Carroll talks a lot about the opportunity. He loves experience, especially in the secondary that is so inexperienced and new. A guy who has started in the NFL, has started in the division, is going to get an opportunity, and that opportunity for Maurice Alexander, a strong safety, is going to happen, it sounds like, by next weekend.
Yeah, that should be interesting to see how they work it. Then you look at the offensive line, and I guess, is there a challenger to DJ Fluker at right guard?
I don't think so, John. I don't see it because of the philosophy that Mike Solari's blocking technique of take your man that's over top you and put him in the ground. And if DJ Fluker can do anything, that's what he can do. He's not known as a very good pass well off the point of attack. He had struggled in pass protection. He struggled against quick pass rushers with the Giants last year and with the Chargers. And then he's coming off that knee injury that cost him after only six games of the Giants at the end of the season last year. But Fluker is a straight-ahead drive blocker, a mauler, a road grader. And that's why they signed him. And that's what they're trying to do on the offensive line. No more of the smoke and mirrors, zone angles of Tom Cable. It's drive your man into the ground. And I think of all the linemen right now on that Seahawks off the starting five, DJ Fluker's the guy most apt to do just that. The rest of them are Justin Brett and Ethan Posick at left guard, and Jermaine Effetti at right tackle, all learning this new system of Solari, but Fluker loves it. You can almost see him salivating through his chin strap, but you're asking me just to drag block the guy in front of me. Okay, I'll go do that. He seems to be one of the biggest guys I've seen in a Seahawk uniform in a long, long time, just wide. He's 6'5", and he's as wide as I-5. He's going to get a chance to do what he does best, and if he gets beat on a couple pass rushes and Russell Wilson has to run away from DJ Fluker missing a pass block, the Seahawks will take that for what they think he can do in drive blocking.
No question. Hey, thanks for joining us, and I'll see you tomorrow. Read Greg Bell on the News Tribune and newstribune.com. And, Greg, thanks for joining us.
Always fun. Thank you, John.
Okay, 866-979-ESPN, 206-421, ESPN, The John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to The John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle and 710sports.com. Now, more John Clayton.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Larry in Yakima. Hey, Larry.
Yeah, hey, John. How's it going?
Good.
Thanks for taking my call. Hey, I just wanted to talk about, just bring up the 49ers defense. I think the 49ers fans like myself have reason to be pretty optimistic this year. But all the talk has been on the offense, of course, with the Jimmy Garoppolo coming in at the end of last year. But their defense, I think, is going to be in position to really step up. You've been talking about the last half of last season a lot, so I was kind of looking into that. The Niners were sixth in yards allowed over the last 7 weeks of the season. And partly because they have a young defense, and I think they came into their own a little bit towards the end of the season, but also because of the offense, under Garoppolo being first in yards per drive, they weren't asking as much of their defense in the second half of the season. And I think you maybe got a better picture of what the defense is like. The first half of the season with Beathard and Hoyer playing quarterback, man, they were just asking a ton of their defense, a lot of three and outs. They were just really putting their defense in bad spots. So, like I said, they got a lot of youth. There were three rookies that played prominently on that defense, Solomon Thomas on the line, Reuben Foster, and Akella Witherspoon at cornerback. They've got really, I think, nine guys who are in there going into their fourth year or less.
Mm-hmm.
They're basically going to have everybody back on that defense, except they're adding Sherman on the corner. And they drafted a linebacker out of BYU who could see, I wouldn't be surprised to see him starting alongside Foster by season. So I just think that the defense is being overlooked a little bit, and I think that they should be in really good shape this year.
Yeah, I mean, I look at them as more next year's team, but I'm not overlooking them for this year because I think they're doing it the right way. And it really, when you take a look at the build up of a team, usually that second year, you either get a little bit of a sophomore slump or you take this next step. But it's the third year in a gradual build up that really goes. And just go for all the examples. I mean, it was the third year for the Indianapolis Colts, even though their roster was declining a little bit. To get to a championship game. It was the third year for the Seahawks to really make the move once they got Russell Wilson with Pete Carroll. I mean, you go through all these different teams, and it's usually the third year. I mean, it's rare that you have what happened in Philly, that you have that second year that they make the explosion. But see, I look at them more as next year, but I think they're going to make a significant jump. I mean, because I look at them as being like a 7 or 8 win team. Like the Seahawks, I mean, you wonder about the pass rush. I know they've drafted so many first round guys on the defensive line, but they're still one more pass rusher away from being good. They don't know if it's going to be Solomon Thomas being the Leo or all that, but overall they're building it in the right way. And I mean, it's going to be a fun season.
Yeah, and I think on the pass rusher, I think they, for some reason, everyone expected them to go with the pass rusher in the first round. I think they just didn't like the guys that were there.
Mm-hmm.
For rookies and for free agents, I think they probably have somebody, their eye on somebody to get in next off season. So that's the one spot where they're going to be challenged this year. Maybe they really like what they've got and they can see some improvements, but I think in the next offseason they'll pick up a pass rusher, and that will be really key. The NFC is so stacked this year that, no, I wouldn't be surprised at all if they don't make the playoffs this year. Looking at the quarterbacks in the NFC, John, who's the weakest quarterbacks in the NFC? You go through the list and
there's not many. I mean, you go division by division. I mean, you know, you have to say right now you don't know as much about Arizona, but they put $20 million into Sam Bradford and they've drafted Josh Rosen. Then you go, I mean, I look in Chicago right now. I'm not totally sold yet on Mitch Trubisky. That's why I'm looking forward to see him next week at the Hall of Fame game. You know, I know he's been very inconsistent, but that division, I mean, that's the one that you look at with a little bit of a jaundiced eye. I mean, you look at the NFC East, I mean, you got four there, and the NFC South is just basically loaded. Yeah, I mean, what Chicago is the one team that you say, well, maybe that's the one that doesn't have it. But overall, I mean, Arizona and Chicago, what's that, 14 out of 16? Or, I mean, what's that, 14 out of 16?
Yeah, I would say 14 teams are pretty well set at quarterback. And, you know, just a couple of years ago, the talk was, man, where's all the young quarterbacks? There's just no young quarterbacks in this league who are stepping up and look like they're going to, you know, replace these guys that are going to be retiring down the line. But right now, man, the quarterback market, it really looks pretty strong in the NFL.
You're right.
NFC particularly.
Now, that's a great point. I mean, 14 out of 16, and again, it's not like they're starved in Arizona. I mean, you got a first-round pick and a former top pick in the draft who has knee problems, but still, they gave him $20 million. So, and he has done some good things.
And Trubisky is a, what, number two pick?
First-round pick? No, he's a first-round pick.
He could step up this year and really make a jump. So, I mean, there's going to be 16 solid quarterbacks in the conference. So it's going to make for an exciting race.
Oh, it really does. Hey, great phone call. Thank you so much.
Thanks, John.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Ryan in Seattle. Hey, Ryan. Ryan, are you there?
Hi, John.
Hi.
Hey, I was, hello?
Yes, you're on.
Hey, I was wondering, I was just wondering how, what do you think about our cornerback situation and in Philly, and what do you also think about?
In Philadelphia?
Yeah.
Yeah, I it's much better. I mean, they just kind of really, they just kind of played around with it in the first year and a half. I think getting Ronald Darby was a good upgrade. Certainly getting Sidney Jones is good. Mills looks like he can do some good things in the slot. And I'm liking the way it's going. It's going in the right direction. I mean, the first year, it was all over the place. There was no depth and really nothing good in the starters. But I noticed that now they keep on adding him. And that's why I give Howie Roseman, the general manager, applause. And that's why I voted for him to be the executive of the year, because, you know, he kept on adding. I mean, he go gets a Darby in that. So, no, I think it's going definitely in the right direction. I mean, is it the best? No. But it's so much better than it was 2 years ago, and it's not bad now.
Oh, no, definitely. And I was also wondering if I think Derek Barnett's going to step up again this year.
He was running first team the first couple days, even though Michael Bennett's there. In fact, Michael Bennett was just destroying people yesterday. But, they have him at right now as number one.
And what do you think about Earl Thomas coming to the Birds?
No. They already got two safeties. You got McLeod and you got Malcolm Jenkins.
Yeah, but I'm not too happy with McLeod. I was wondering, he could probably be an upgrade in the trade piece.
Mm-hmm. Oh, no. I mean, you're talking about a Hall of Fame caliber safety in Earl Thomas. I mean, you know, he goes on most teams, he's going to be better than what's going to be there. But can you afford it? I mean, think about the sacrifices you had to make this year just to, get things going. I mean, what I worry about is, like, forget the safety position. What's there at linebacker? Think about that. I mean, you know, Jordan Hicks had to come off what, the Achilles or the ACL, whatever it was. But, and, you know, he's out there. Nigel Bradham was, you know, their second best linebacker, but he's got a one game suspension. And Michael Kendricks is now, he was cut and he's out of there going to Cleveland. So that's their area that they need to upgrade, and they have to.
No, they
don't need safety help. What they need is linebacker help. Because again, one injury away, and they already got one guy, one game suspension. So that's their big area. But defensive line, boy, are they loaded. They're in good shape there. Hey, thank you for the phone call. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. It's a John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
Now, more John Clayton on 710 ESPN Seattle and 710sports.com.
6979 ESPN 206-421 ESPN. So how do you feel right now? Worried about the pass rush at all for the Seahawks? I'm a little worried with the fact that you look at Deion Jordan not out there practicing, and Frank Clark, he's out there doing some stuff right now. Not really overdoing it because of all the hand issues, but again, I think he's going to be fine. The big thing is, I think, getting him a contract because, he's living up to his contract. He's not holding out. He's being good about it, but also they need to lock him up because, again, he's so important for this team because, they're down. If he's not out there, then you're down your top four pass rushers, and that's a big, big problem. But 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. And then on the Mariners, how worried are you right now? It's been an entire month where the runs aren't coming. 3.1 runs per game during this month of July, and a lot of guys still aren't shaking it. They're not getting the home runs. They're not getting the batting average. I mean, it's been a miserable month for the bats. And what is going to make it better? I mean, they've got to start to figure all this out because the A's are now one game behind, and I mean, they could tonight come back and match it, and all of a sudden everything's tied. And then the interesting part is the Mariners are hitting the division games at a down cycle. And so, and the A's are in a complete up cycle right now. So what's your concerns about that? 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Thoughts on the opening of the NFL season and the way things are going in training camps. We're trying to track all the injuries and all the movement in that. The Earl Thomas situation continues, which, of course, it just doesn't go away. It's one that, it looks like he'll be a long holdout and, no benefits in that. And will there be a trade? Who knows? I mean, at some point you kind of wonder. I mean, Dallas got some bad news this week. Their safety, who's, kind of filling the void at the free safety position, Kevon Frazier, has some blood clotting issues. So they have him on the non-football injury list, and they don't know what he's going to be able to do. So, they may have even more of a need for an Earl Thomas. But at this stage, there's no offer that even intrigues the Seahawks whatsoever. 8-6. Let's go to Sean in Newcastle. Hey, Sean.
Hey, Professor, how are you?
I'm doing great. How about you?
I'm doing good. Just coming back from the dog park. It's, pretty good outside.
Yes.
I took my dog.
Oh, fantastic.
So, what's going on with ED3? I mean, are we going to build our defensive scheme around him anymore, or that ship has sailed?
Now, you're talking about who that again?
ED3, Al Thomas.
Oh, and right now they're experimenting with two different options. As for Earl Thomas.
Right.
Yeah, it's got to be either Tedrick Thompson, who looks pretty good as a free safety going deep, and then they'll have right. Bradley McDougal at the strong, and then Delano Hill's more of a natural strong safety, and a real good player from the Big Ten that I think is real intriguing. But now they just have to get him on the field to see how well they play. I mean, the first day, it looks to me like Thompson's a little bit ahead because he finished the minicamp going first team, and then started the first day of training camp, and then yesterday they had Hill at strong safety first team with McDougal at free. So they'll just play around with that. McDougal's done a real good job of showing leadership on the field with those two young players, trying to coach them up in that. So it's an open competition for the two, and now there's four preseason games or so, or until Earl shows up, to see if either one or both can handle that situation. They won't handle it as well as Earl. Earl's the best. But, they can still try to handle it.
So, he is a Pro Bowl, All-Pro caliber player. Do you really think it must absolutely basically affect the morale of the team, especially for the new guy? Not the fact that, he's gone, but something like, if he can do it, well, we don't care too. Is that a fact, or people still come and put their best foot forward?
Well, the big thing that they're trying to figure out is, where's Earl in the equation for what he thinks of this team? Does he buy into this team? Because they got the feeling, right or wrong, that Michael Bennett and Richard Sherman didn't. I mean, again, and it's not like they're anti-Seattle or they're not anti-Seahawk. I mean, what they look at is that, hey, I'm getting older. I've wanted to win championship games. I'm built to win championship games. And if it's not going to win a championship, then it's not worth the time. And so, time to move on. Is Earl in that same boat? They don't know. All they know is that he's holding out. And he also has reached out to Dallas. I don't know if he reached out to the Raiders. That may be false news. But again,
yeah,
I don't know if I buy
but
that.
I mean, I don't think Dallas is in a state to win a championship, right? So it boils down totally to the money at this point of time.
Yeah, because I've here's where I don't buy in on Dallas is that they've got the lowest paid quarterback in the league, Dak Prescott. And you know where the way things go. You watched it here in Seattle. Load up as much talent as you can during the quarterback's rookie contract. And so they didn't do it. I mean, they let more guys go than they signed. And now Dak Prescott's going to go into year three. Next year's year four. And they're eventually going to have to pay him. And they're going to waste that time. And, you know. They need to load up. That's why, you know, they really should consider making a move on Earl Thomas.
Yeah. So I was watching that movie Moneyball yesterday where Billy Beane from Oakland Athletics used, like, computer and, like, machine learning, not machine learning, big data to basically scout and draft players. Do you think football is ready for something like that, or we are still going to depend upon scouts and coaches and GMs to figure out which player is
good
and not?
Nope, that's happening. And what's going on right now is that, and it's going to be a big push here in the next year. You know, they've got chips on all the shoulder pads and jerseys and stuff like that, and what they can measure is, you know, where a guy is, his how fast he's moving, and they can incorporate all that into analytics. And so this is the first full year that they really didn't. Ironically, it's a Seattle company that's involved in this, and it's going to be huge because what it's going to show is that, you know, like I'll give you an example, an analytical example in basketball. I'm trying to remember the center for the Celtics who came, he was from Minnesota and that, and so he was starting to wear down, and so he'd be like 8 minutes in, they did chips on him, and at the 8 minute mark he lost all his speed and that. Yeah, so what they did is that they just rested him after 8 minutes. He got 2 good years out of it.
Yeah, it's coming. It's just in worse, but it's coming. So no 4-12, right? I mean, what is going on with the national narrative, 4-12, and people are just...
See, I now you believe in Russell Wilson, right? I mean, you believe the reports that he's the fifth or sixth best quarterback in the league. So I went through all the quarterbacks since like 2004 and, you know, the Ben Roethlisbergers when he's healthy and Daryl, obviously Tom Brady, Rodgers, all those guys, they don't get worse than 8-8, even in a bad year. Andrew Luck has never had an 8-8, worse than an 8-8 season when he's healthy. All right. You can say that Matt Ryan did, but what happened is after 5 years, where they went to the playoffs, they lost their running game. They were giving up 27 points a game. And so they had a 4-12 and 6-10 season, but then they were giving up 27 points a game. It was, and you look at the 3 years of 7-9 for Drew Brees. Well, that defense was giving up 28 points a game. What I look at is that this defense last year had 7 games. A lot of those guys that finished the season, because remember, they didn't have Sherman, they didn't have Averill, and they didn't have Cam Chancellor. So they gave up 23 points a game. And so you saw, and they did it, you know, they played teams like Philadelphia, Atlanta Falcons, the Rams, Jacksonville. So they played a tougher schedule at the end in the 7 games that were out there. And so now they've had 7 games to look at and see if they can get better. This defense is going to give up 27 points a game. And if they give up, you know, it's 21-23 and they can score 24, they'll be fine. Not 4-12. That's if you score more points than you gain, then you're 9-7 at least. Hey, thank you for the phone call. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to The John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle and 710sports.com.
Our thanks to Matt Nelson for running and producing the show. Good to have him back from vacation. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's zip through some quickly here. Let's go to Victor in Auburn. Hey, Victor.
Hey, John, another great show. Well, good job on a series last week.
Oh, thank you. That was fun.
Hey, a couple quick questions. How much do you think this Verrett injury is going to hurt San Diego or whatever?
A lot. Well, because couple that with the injury to Hunter Henry. Hunter Henry is becoming one of their best offensive players, and Verrett is a Pro Bowl caliber, or at least he's been to the Pro Bowl, but he's been hurt so much. Now he's 5'7", so you know that works against him. But no, to have him blow that out, I mean, that was a good secondary. That's going to hurt because who do they have really to step up? I mean, on the other side, Casey Hayward's real good, but now, I mean, was it Tyrell Williams or somebody like that has to come in there? That's going to be tough.
What do you think that equals in wins-wise, like one less win?
I think if you combine Henry and Verrett, that's one less win. So if they were 10 or 11, that takes one away, I think.
Okay, then in two quick statements. Commando, I'm not worried about the Seahawks at all. And then the next week is I don't think Mac is worth being paid the top defensive player over Donald or whatever the Rams guy's name is. He's had a couple impact games, but is he the overrated?
Who's that? Jared Goff?
No. The Khalil Mack, whatever the Raider guy.
Yeah. No, I mean, he's really good. I mean, he has the pass rush. He's a great player, but I think Aaron Donald's the better one. Aaron Donald's the best defensive player in football. He's the one that deserves the most money. Hey.
Okay, any series this week, John?
Not this week, next week.
Take care, bud. Bye.
Okay, thank you. 866-979 ESPN, 206-421 ESPN. Let's go to Commando Dave. David, how are you?
Hey, I'm doing great. What's up, John Clayton?
Not much. We're right up against the clock here, so.
Hey, man, let me give a quick shout-out then to a couple of John Clayton Show listeners I met yesterday, Ross and Lars in the Red Roaster. Good meeting you guys and talking Sonics and the crime of Howard Dutch Schultz. And while I'm giving shout-out, let me give one to Curtis and Ashley for filling in for Matt Nelson, who's back from a too short of a vacation, not to be confused with a vacation with too short. That's something completely different. You know what I'm saying, John Clayton?
Yeah,
speaking
right.
of John Clayton, I listened to your show from the VMAC. The one thing that really stands out from last year's training camp versus this year is either you're further from the speakers or the Seahawks got a new DJ.
Well, I think they have a new DJ, but I mean, we're getting all kind of texts saying it was too much of a distraction with the music, but we have no choice. I mean, that's what they play.
Yeah, it's killing you last year. Man, look, right quick, let me give a shout out to one of my favorite John Clayton Show callers, Jimmy, ladies and gentlemen. Once again, he was on target about the NFL players protest problem, and I only call it an NFL protest problem since it seems as though that's the only way the league has viewed the situation from a PR standpoint, since the NFL is basically concerned only on how it looks on TV, and thanks to Ray Rice, the NFL additionally is concerned with how it's viewed on social media. You know, the league, John Clayton, could have easily looked at this as a PR opportunity, as it did with No More and breast cancer, and make a strong statement that the NFL stands with the players against police brutality. And in each of the 32 NFL cities, the NFL is committed to working with law enforcement in many ways to support their efforts for a fair policing with $32 million contribution, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And to go even further, it would behoove the league to look at it as an NFL Players of the Future problem. 17-year-old Antoine Rose Jr. was shot in the back and killed June 19th of this year in East Pittsburgh killed for the crime of fleeing a traffic stop. Now, Antoine was an honor student and probably a Steelers fan. How many future Steelers, how many future Detroit Lions, how many future New Orleans Saints players and stars are not realizing their true potential of their God-given talents and abilities because some jackass cop decided to go judge, jury, and executioner?
Exactly. And I've got to run, problem. But I can tell you this. By the way, the area you're just talking about is right next to Braddock. So I know it very well, and I felt for that. That was horrible. Hey, thank you very much, Commando, and thanks, everybody. We'll be back on Monday at 10, next week at 9 on Saturday. It's the John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.